Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing. Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. We were talking this morning about mandatory annual mental health evaluations, which is an idea floating around in government today. And a lot of people with very little thinking would imagine that mandatory annual mental health evaluations might be a good thing because we need to pay attention to our mental health. The problem is as we talked about the medical diagnostic manual in previous shows, that even the former authors of that manual say because of changes in the manual, tens of thousands of Americans will be classified as mentally ill that before were considered to be sane and normal people. More and more people are being classified every day as mentally ill, and under the right conditions are sometimes incarcerated in hospitals, not for crimes, but for being mentally different than the doctors, and drugged to keep them there because they don't want to be there and they don't want to cooperate. So I think we need to put them on Thorazine or Luxol or some of the drugs that totally incapacitate you. I know people who are hardworking, industrious individuals who had an opinion that was different than the people that were given the kind of power to make these decisions. And there was one individual, for instance, his father believed back in the 30s when Social Security came along that it was the mark of the beast. He was an itinerant preacher and he preached all over the Midwest. And he believed that Social Security was the mark of the beast. Now, of course, you have to have a Social Security number in order to get a driver's license, a medical license, a business license, a marriage license, anything, according to Title 42, Section 666 of the United States U.S. Codes. But anyway, I'll let you read our article on Mark of the Beast and you figure it out. So whether you think it's the mark of the beast or not, his father believed that it was. It absolutely fits once you understand what the mark of God is. The mark of God is faith. It's the letter Tav, which stands for faith in the Hebrew. And that has to be written in your mind and in your heart by God so that you would be considered to have the mark of God. Those people without that faith receive the mark of the beast. And what is the mark of the beast? The beast is a authoritarian institution that takes a bite out of people, controls their lives, consumes them, devours them. That's what the beast is. You know, that if you look in prophecy, you've got bears and leopards and eagles, and they're representing governments. And we do the same thing. I mean, we have, you know, eagle is the symbol of Rome, it's the symbol of the United States, and the bear is a, kind of a symbol of the Soviet Union, and a lion for the men of Tarsus, or England. These are symbols, they're symbolic, they're metaphors for the character of these institutions. But they're also predators, and they take a bite, and they devour, and they attack, and they consume. And they're beasts. And we like it. Some people like it. And that's what the prophecy is all about. But if you want to turn them into symbols, you know, looking for the, you know, two horned beasts and the seven-headed dragon and And you may look forever, but these are symbols. They're trying to tell you something. The mark of the beast is the character of the beast. Do you take a bite out of one another? You know, if you went in and read the Bible, they talk about we be the, you know, the city be the cauldron and we be the flesh. They talk about that in the Old Testament. Let's build us a city. And we be the flesh. And they talk about, you know, devouring one another in the biblical arena in the Old Testament. But even the New Testament, in Galatians, if you go down to Galatians 5 and you read that, say verse 13, for brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Are you free? You remember now, the bondage of Egypt, 20% of everything you earned had to go to the government. The gold was in, you didn't have a right to own gold. You only had these little like clay scarabs and papyrus paper and stuff to use as money because the gold all belonged to the king. And you might have some in your possession if you were a goldsmith or whatever, but you didn't really own it. It belonged to the king. He could confiscate it anytime he wanted. Your labor didn't really completely belong to you, but 20% of your labor every year had to go to the king, the Pharaoh. That was the bondage of Egypt. You didn't own your land either. You had your land. It was given to you by permission of the Pharaoh. Because you had sold your land during the famine. You'd sold your labor during the famine. You sold all your gold during the famine. So all those things belong to the government. And of course, that's the way it is today. And they can confiscate it anytime they want, as you could see with H.J.R. 192, passed back in, what was it, June 5th, 1933? That U.S. citizens weren't allowed to own gold. Now, they've repealed that, but you can only have legal title to gold, and a legal title is only an apparent title that carries with it no beneficial interest. So you still don't have the beneficial interest in gold, even if you were to have it. They could come and take it away from you if they needed it. You know, recently there was somebody in the news who was an undocumented individual. We may have talked about it in some of the previous shows. They didn't get a birth certificate. They didn't get a Social Security number when they were born. And none of their sisters or brothers did. And their parents raised them up. The father was an attorney at law in Texas. He could actually practice in several states. My father could practice in some of the same states he could practice in. But he's also a CPA, a tax lawyer. And he didn't get his kids any Social Security numbers. I haven't got a chance to talk to him about this, since one of these days I will, because I am in touch with him. And one of our traveling ministers will probably meet with him. But they were undocumented, and they suddenly wanted to get documented. Now, they helped some of their kids as they got older and wanted to get documented. They made that choice. But they didn't document them so that they could have that choice later on. It's not much of a choice because you can't, remember, you can't get a driver's license. You can't get, now, if you were from Mexico, you can just waltz right into California. You not only can get a driver's license, you can get a Social Security number by law. You just walk in and get it. Just hand that. You could have got bank accounts even without it. That just opened up a bank account without a Social Security number if you were from Mexico. But if you were born in America, nope. You can't have those things. Why can't an American have it, but a Mexican can have it? And I don't begrudge the Mexican. I'm just saying, what's their reasoning? Because there actually is a reason. A lot of people say, it's unfair and everything. That's absolutely logical. Once you understand how the system works. You see, because, you know, like, you know, I know somebody who's got a birth certificate, they never had a Social Security number, and they want to go down and get a Social Security number, and they can't, they won't give them a Social Security number. They got a birth certificate. They can prove they've been in the country. They never left the country. They didn't go to public school, but they actually worked down at the public school. They've appeared in the newspaper. They've been around. They got all kinds of people testifying. They've always lived here. And like I said, they have a birth certificate, but they won't give them a Social Security number. That you, like I say, a Mexican can walk in and he can just get it. But this guy can't get it. Why can't he get it? He's got to go get a passport first. Why does he have to get a passport? Well, you go to Preparing You and read what it means when you get a passport. It reads that, I mean, this is the law. I'm not making it up. You can go look it up yourself. And if you go get a passport, they can just grab you off the street anytime they think that it's important. And they can put you to work in a civilian work project without pay. That's absolutely legal. That's the rules. I didn't make them up. I thought it was funny, and people seeing this girl's blog about not having any documentation, these guys are saying that these parents, they make all these rules for their kids. They should be doing that. You want to know the rules? Once you get that number, you get that passport, they got hundreds of thousands of rules you got to follow. And that's why they give these kids who are undocumented, not aliens, Americans. They're Americans. But somebody says, this girl is being deprived of her American citizenship. No, she's not. She's being deprived of her U.S. citizenship. She's not. She's an American. They don't doubt. If you went and talked to these people, they don't doubt that she's an American. They know she was born in America. She's just not subject. So she has to do something to become subject. She has to go get a passport. Because when you get a passport, you're subject. And then they'll give her a Social Security number too. But that's because she came to the age of majority. She passed 18 and didn't have a Social Security number. She was still a child. Just, you know, if you go read Call No Man Father on our website, Preparing You, His Holy Church, go read it. The law in Rome at the time of Augustus and eventually Marcus Aurelius was that to be freed from your natural family and be brought under the patronus of Rome, the father of Rome, the emperor of Rome, the Roman government, so that it becomes your father and it gets to make rules for you. And I can tell you this, there, either Rome or the United States or Australia, they got a lot more rules than your natural father would ever have time to make. And you're going to have to abide by them or they're going to throw you in jail. And this is, of course, why Christ said, call no man on earth father. Because he knew those fathers don't really love you. Heck, they'll take your sons and they'll make them run before their chariots. You know what that's like? I mean, like, you got a team of horses. I mean, you saw Ben-Hur. Come on. Team of horses, chariots running along. And your son's out there running ahead of the chariot. If he trips, he's dead. That's what they're talking about in the Bible when they said that this is what your kings will do, that your leaders, your rulers, your presidents, your prime ministers, they will take your sons and they'll put them in harm's way to do what? So oil companies will get rich and those oil companies will make them rich. So publishing companies will become rich and they'll make you rich. You know, them, not you personally. You'd be dead on the battlefield. That's the beast nature. You know how beasts get the power? They give a little power to all you guys. You can now, you out there, you can just take your kid down and put him in school. You have the power to do that. Who's going to pay for that? Your neighbor's going to pay for that. You're not going to pay, you know, I mean, cheapest school I've seen, it runs about $6,000 per student per year. I had six kids, so that'd be $36,000. Now, I mean, there are plenty of public schools in the United States it costs over $20,000 per student per year to send your kids to school. For 12 years, you're talking, what, $250,000? You paid that in taxes? No. Your neighbor did, though. You're forcing your neighbor to do it. You have the power to do that. as a citizen of the United States, of a U.S. citizen, you have the power to force your neighbor. Now, you won't actually do it. I mean, you won't actually go to your neighbor's house with a gun and say, okay, I want you to give up $3,000 this year, or $4,000, $5,000, whatever you need, so that my kids can have free education. You're not going to do that because, you know, that'd make you feel kind of awkward. So you just have the government do it, and then you go send your kids to school. All you have to do is sign here, and your kids are in school. That's called a covetous practice. You're doing that to get your, force your neighbor to pay for your education. So what does it say in Galatians 5:13? For brethren, ye have called unto liberty. You're not at liberty. He's talking about Christians. Christians were out of the system. They were cast out. See, anybody who got the baptism of Christ instead of the baptism of John the Baptist, they were cast out. That's what it says in John. They couldn't go get benefits and welfare anymore at the temple, which was a government building, just like it was all the temples in Rome. Those were government buildings that provided you with free bread and tokens so you could go to the circus. You know, that's what those temples were. Your temples are Social Security and welfare and all those buildings that you go down to. You know, that in the Treasury Department and all those that finance your wars with debt money. Those are your temples. That, you know, you ever notice that those Washington headquarter buildings, they look like temples. They look like Roman temples. Because they are. They are Roman temples. And that's your gods. That's your ruling judges. That's your God's many. They're going to tell you what you get to keep and what you don't get to keep. Because you're not a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. You're a government of the bureaucracy that controls you. You think you're going to vote and make a difference? You are delusional. Give it a shot. I've been watching it for decades. Over half a century. It's a joke. But if you want to do that, that's fine with me. If you want a real answer, let's read on. Because the Christians were called unto liberty. Remember, they live by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. They were called unto liberty. Now, they had people come in and spy out their liberty. But those were real Christians. Those weren't the kind of Christians you guys are today. That are playing church out there. To think that, you know, religion is about what you think about God. Well, liberty was about responsibility. Religion was about responsibility. Religion was about how you perform your duty to God and your fellow man. That was the definition of religion just 200 years ago. But you had to change that in order to do the kind of religion you guys do today, which is playing church. So the brethren of Christ, the real church, the real Christians, ye were called unto liberty, which meant you were also called unto responsibility. Only use not your liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. Do you go to church to serve your neighbor? You go to church to make sure that everybody gets to homeschool their children and doesn't send them to benefactors who exercise authority, because you know what should have been for your welfare will become a snare if you do that. Again, back to that article on Call No Man Father. Three things required to liberate you from your natural father, where he could put, make maybe 10, 20 rules, and bring you under the authority of your earthly statutory father, your conscripted patri, as they called them in Rome, your conscripted fathers, the Senate and the Emperor, to bring you unto them, where they made 10,000 rules. This was such a big deal in natural law that they required three steps to manumitting you from your natural father and bringing you under the authority of the father, the state. Parens patria. If you look in title, I think it's title 8, section 15 of the U.S. codes, tells you about parens patria. It actually uses the Latin. You see, because you're under Roman law. You got new fathers. Your father is Obama. That's your father. He and your other conscripted fathers, Congress and the Senate. They make the law. They decide what is good and evil. And they want mandatory health, mental health examinations. Annually. And they're already doing it. They've been doing it for years. The report I was reading from this morning, it goes back to 1905. I mean, it's not 1905. 2005. 2005. Scared you. No, back, although this started back in 1905. Don't kid yourself. But back in, actually in 1911 is where they started the study for the federal birth registration area. And we tell a little bit about that in Call No Man Father, and in the book Thy Kingdom Comes, we explain all that. And you can go get those books and those articles, and it will only cost you zero money. Absolutely zero money. You just have to download them and read them. Now, it may cost you your delusions, but you can read them. But in Call No Man Father, they tell you these three steps. CDC, in this article by the CDC, this is CDC government site. This is not a conspiracy theory guy. I just read the first paragraph, and they talk about independent federal surveillance systems prevalent of mental disorders and indicators of mental health. Surveillance data from multiple federal agencies has already been gathered and put into databases. What are they looking for? They tell you right there in the article on the CDC site. People with ODD. Oppositional defiant disorder. You disagree. You don't want vaccinations? You got operational defiance. Excuse me. Oppositional defiance disorder. You don't want vaccinations for your kids. You want to home teach your kids. Oppositional defiance disorder. You need drugs. Did you know that? You need drugs. Again, I see in the same first paragraph. Again, surveillance data collected, including attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, disruptive behavioral disorder, oppositional defiance disorder. They got names for these. ODD, ADHD, ASD. And you got it. Because you disagree, you're crazy, they say. And of course, they have the power to decide good and evil. They can call your good evil. Where'd they get that power? You failed to be the government of the people, for the people, by the people. You thought you could elect somebody else to do the job of government and rule over your neighbor and force your neighbor to pay for your child's education, your health care, your old age pension, to take care of your parents with Social Security. You're not doing it. You got the government doing it. And you do no more ought for your parents. The same system was being set up by Rome and Judea. But Christians were called under liberty. But because they were called under responsibility. Only use not your liberty as an occasion to flesh, to sloth, to laziness. You have to take care of your parents. And he says, but by love, serve one another. That's what they were doing in the first century church. Church service was, get this, actually service. It wasn't song and dance and music and everybody pretending to be, you know, holy. It was actually helping one another, providing for the needs of society through faith, hope, and charity. But you don't want to do that. You want to have the government do it for you, and you wonder why you're not free. Why they can come in and not only force you to take vaccinations, but in a short time, and it's already happening, we've got numbers of cases that we can show you, they're forcing you to take psychotropic drugs. Because you got ODD. You disagree. You obstinate, defiant individual. You got a disorder. You disagree with the beast. So they're going to bite your head off, man. For all the laws is fulfilled in one word, even in this. It goes on to say in Galatians 14, 15, 4, 5, 14. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. That's why you go to church. To learn what that means. If your neighbors actually loved you as themselves, and you loved your neighbors as you love yourself, and you were coming together, taking care of one another, what in the heck would you need government benefits? Government is run by men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. Christ said it was not to be that way with you, but it is. So you're not a Christian. Get used to it. If you're not gathering together with other people to become the social welfare of your society, you're not following Christ. You're not following John the Baptist. You're not following Moses. And you're not following Abraham. So you are neither Jew nor Christian nor even Muslim. You are the beast. What's the next line? Galatians 5:15. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. This I say, then walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. He's talking about these government benefits of Rome, the free bread and circuses, because Caesar don't give you his bread. He bites your neighbor and gives you the flesh of your neighbor, and he calls it welfare. And you've been eating with great appetite, even though Proverbs tells you that if you sit and eat with a ruler and you be a man of appetite, put a knife to your throat, for he serves you deceitful meats. That will become a snare and a trap, as David says, as Paul says in the New Testament, quoting David, and that's where you're at. And here's what's coming. They're going to, and already have, establish almost a mandatory annual mental health evaluation. You want to get free health care? They're going to make you come in and get a physical, and they have already designed physicals that include examinations of mental health. That's why you go into the doctor's office. I actually went into a doctor's office about, I don't know, maybe almost 10 years now. I went in there. I was pretty much over it anyway, but everybody kept insisting that I go see this doctor. And a kid that grew up here had become a doctor, so I went in to see him and thought we'd get an x-ray and see what kind of damage had been done to my lungs. And they had you fill out, they want to know if you own any guns. Well, of course, I didn't answer. But they're not going to let you even have medical care unless you answer all their questions, which is part of the indicators of mental health. Because, you know, if you own a gun, you must have paranoid delusions. You might, if you own a gun and you have ODD, they have to take your guns away from you. You're dangerous. You have a mental disorder. So you get the picture? Okay, we kind of went over this all before, and we're coming up on the break, but public health surveillance involves systematic and ongoing collection of data followed by the interpretation and dissemination of that data to encourage public health. Well, that's what it says. And that's what they've been doing since 2005 and even before, because they'll go back to all the data. But now we're going to talk about the shadow aspect again. And we're going to tell you more about that when we come back to Keys to the Kingdom. And tell you why you do have a mental disorder. and what you can do about it. Because you all, see, if you listen to the right, you know, Carl Jung or Freud, you're all mentally disturbed. And they need to round you up right now. So you need to know how this works. And we're going to talk about that when we come back after the break. Yes. Okay. Okay. So, you want me to wind it up like at 358? Okay. Well, I'll try to shoot for that. I'm not perfect at watching time, but I'll try to perfect it. Okay. Okay, well, welcome back. We're talking about the fact that you're all mentally ill, to one degree or another. Now, I don't think you ought to take drugs to fix your mental problems, but we all are a little crazy, and we have delusions. We have misconceptions. We have ideas about reality that are probably not correct. But if I believe that, you're pretty safe because I'm not going to force you to take drugs. I'm not going to arrest you or throw you into a mental institution. But there are plenty of people out there who will. And what they call mentally defective, it might be that you're actually the one who's not defective. You might be the one who's actually seeing the truth. And they're the ones that are defective. You see, if you ask Carl Jung about psychology, he's going to tell you that there is a shadow or shadow aspect that refers to an unconscious aspect of your personality, which the conscious ego does not identify in itself. I mean, you've got something that you're thinking in the back of your mind that you don't bring into the conscious area of your mind. You see this with, really crazy people, like Jeffrey Dahmer eating people and murdering people and wanting to stop, but then having to do it again, compulsive behavior, obsessive compulsive behavior. And he's actually murdering and eating people and putting them in the freezer. And you can pretty much write that down as crazy. He's insane. And he can't stop because it's compulsive. Now, he could stop, but he'd have to look into his unconscious mind. See, this unconscious aspect of his personality is manifesting itself as a serial killer. Now, almost everybody has some unconscious aspects of their personality, but it doesn't make them a serial killer. It might make them annoying. It might make them a jerk. Now, I mean, we have people now that are bipolar. We used to just call them jerks. But now they got a scientific name for it. You're not a jerk. You're bipolar. Now, all you people out there are bipolar. I'm not putting you down. I think there's a cure. You can get better. I'm not trying to... We're all a little crazy. But I think we can all get a little more sane. And there's a way to do that. And hopefully we'll talk about that before we get to the end of the show. How can you get really more sane? Now, I warn you that if you actually become really sane, everybody else around you who is insane are going to think that you're crazy. Because, see, you're different. If you knew the truth and acted upon the truth and everybody around you believed in the lie, you're crazy from their point of view. Because you see something they don't see. It's kind of like, was it Rudyard Kipling wrote the story about the guys that come into a valley and they're the only ones who can see. Everybody else is blind. And at first the people kind of make them a god. Because they know things that nobody else knows. And they think it's really good. They're like kings. And then they figure out that these people can see. They're crazy. Because nobody can see. And so they start hunting them down and they have to flee for their life. But, you know, that's what you'd be facing if you really became sane. But you want to be sane. You want to know the truth, because that's the only way you can really be free, is to know the truth. So Jung talks about this unconscious aspect of personality, which the conscious ego does not identify in itself, because one tends to reject or choose to remain ignorant of at least desirable aspects of one's personality. The shadow is largely negative. See, you know, people don't mind seeing the good qualities, but the negative ones, they don't want. So the subconscious is filled with the negative personality traits. And they also say this shadow aspect can be the entire unconscious aspect of your personality. Everything of which a person is not fully conscious of. And they go on to say, you know, he writes that everyone carries a shadow. And the less it is embodied in the individual conscious life, the blacker and denser it is. You know, he talks about the light of consciousness. He's using those metaphors when they're talking about this. The projection-making factor, the shadow archetype, he calls it, then has a free hand and can realize its objective if it has won or brings about some other situation characteristic of its power. And so, what did he just say? Well, let's make it simple. That if the beast wants power, it's going to cultivate in you that same spirit and character, because it gets more power. And it's going to do that by giving you power over your neighbor. And then you give the beast more power because you go along with that. And that's why it says in the Bible that through covetous practices you would become merchandise. Because you were willing to use your neighbor to take a bite out of your neighbor. You will become devoured. You will become nothing more than merchandise to be used. Your children. You will actually curse your children with debt because you are okay with using your neighbor. See, the Jungian shadow can conclude can include everything outside of the light of consciousness. That's what it does. Now, I tell you that every time you do something wrong, error, you can call it sin, but you err at least, and you don't admit it. You don't confess it to yourself and maybe sometimes to others. You create a shadow in your subconscious. This is the shadow self. You don't want to look at it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to see myself as, you know, I was kind of a jerk, and I don't want to admit that. You create a shadow in your subconscious. But your brain is still working in there. And the truth is, your brain is a frequency device that both sends out frequencies and receives frequencies, both from other people, the collective consciousness, but also from the other side, the dark area. Now remember, every time you allow more of these negative aspects of your personality to grow, the darker the shadow becomes, the broader the shadow becomes. So how do we bring light where there was darkness? Well, Christ talks about it. But what does Christ really talk about? You know, I'm amazed at the number of people that say they're Christians, and you ask them, what did Christ give us as instructions to do? And they can't list them off. And we talked about it earlier in other shows. What is it? Law, judgment, mercy, and faith? These are what Christ calls the weightier matters. And preachers can't tell me that. They don't tell you that. So in order to have justice, you have to have mercy. So that's an important aspect. So obviously you want mercy, but do you want mercy for others? You see, this is how you counter the balance, the destructive balance of the shadow consciousness, the contamination of the unconscious content of your mind. I'm quoting here from people like Jung. All the contents are blurred and merge into one another in the mind, and there is a contamination. Christ is telling you how to relieve that contamination, to be set free. You have to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, you have to love God, but we won't get into that because you may have delusions about who and what God really is. But Christ, if we refer to Christ as God, and many religions require that you do that, then let's look at the aspects and character of Christ, because that's what we want. That's what will wash the contamination of our unconscious content of our mind. Jesus came to serve. Do you gather in your churches to serve? Jesus came to forgive. He even said that you can't be forgiven unless you forgive others. So what he's saying is the more you forgive others, the more likely it is that you may be forgiven. Now, of course, you have to repent. You have to change your ways. You have to turn around. Well, one of the ways is you have to forgive. Nobody owes you anything. You've had to pay in to Social Security. You had to pay in to your taxes. But you're still not going to demand that they pay you back with free education for your kids. You're going to homeschool your kids. You're going to home health. You're not going to make them. You may have to pay for the insurance, but you're not going to make the claims. You're going to take care of it yourself. Now, you can't always take care of it yourself, so you're going to have to gather together with others who care about you as much as you care about them, or supposed to be as much as you care about yourself. But okay, if you care about them as much as you care about yourself, and they care about you as much as they care about themselves, then that's what it works out. You care about each other as much as you care about each other. That's the way it works. What you're doing is you're actually entering into a spiritual equation, a quantum equation. Instead of being drawn towards the dark side, you know, if we may use the metaphor from Star Wars, you're going to be drawn into the kingdom of light. Well, evil hates light. I mean, that's why you're not in the garden now. You fled the light. You know, I've told people before, you know, that That angel with the fiery sword that shines in all directions, he isn't there to keep you out. He's there to show you the way back. You're just fleeing the light. Why do you flee the light? Because you don't want to see the truth about yourself. I'm willing to, I will accept your hate. You can hate me for telling you the truth. And I breathe it back to you with love. And I tell you more truth. And I bless you with your hate in the form of love. A powerful thing takes place there. Can you do that with your neighbor? You have to lay down your hate, your desire to be your ego. You know, that's what we were talking about there at the beginning. The conscious ego doesn't want to die. You have to lay down that ego and start living a life of service to others. Forgiving others. Giving to others. That's another thing. You have to give. You have to lay down your life. Christ laid down his life entirely. And some of the apostles said that they wanted to follow him. And this was before they knew he was getting crucified. And he says, you know not of what you ask. And they say, we still want. And he says, well, you will have it. Because he could see the future. That's another wonderful thing about seeing the present. It makes it easier to see the future. If you're willing to admit the past and be in the present, you automatically see equally far into the future. But if you deny the past, you deny what you've done, if you deny the truth about your hypocrisy and your sin and your covetous practices, you will not see the future. You won't know what's coming. Zombies have no idea of what's coming. They're zombies. They're just here to satisfy the lust of their flesh. They just, you know, and if you don't look like a zombie, they will destroy you. You got to look like them. They actually get absolutely, totally panicked. The thing is, if you want to go the way of righteousness, you got to repent. You got to put on the full armor of God. You can't just be, you know, give a little. You got to give. You got to forgive. You got to change your ways. You got to come to serve, not be served. You got to have a whole congregation of people who are out there trying to outdo each other in giving and forgiving. And your whole congregation does that. And you're linked together with 9 other congregations like yourself, and they're all trying to do that. You're going to create ripples in the quantum of the universe. You're gonna scare the hell out of the shadow consciousness of others. I mean, just a couple of you could make a huge difference if you actually walked in that way. I mean, miraculous things will start taking place. But you have to actually, so I'm telling you now, you need to join the Living Network. You need to go there, get on the groups, find somebody you'll gather with. We got somebody down in the LA area wanting to form a congregation. We got somebody up here in the Oregon area starting to form a congregation. He's interacting with a lot of people. I've got a whole desk full of names of people who are gathering with other ministers, and they're increasing their congregations. And I have to put seals on these and send them back. Which, if you understand what these things are in the Old Testament, these pieces of paper are weaving my breeches. That's what the Levites were doing. The people wove the breeches of the Levites. Now, that's the physical representation. That was the metaphor. And that's what they're doing by their testimony. But the key element to really start making the difference between life and death, between light and darkness, is that you have to put on the full armor of God, which is the character of Christ, which is you have to gather together with the intention of giving and forgiving, of blessing, of giving, laying down your life so that others may live. That is the absolute antithesis of the dark side. The dark side takes life. They start with little bites. I just want public school. I don't want public health. You're a socialist if you want public school. You might as well go all the way. You know, I'm not encouraging that. What you need to do is repent. But you also have to become your own fire department. I was talking to other ministers, and several of the congregations are really widespread. And so they wanted to start building up their FEMA, their Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary. And they were thinking, well, we'll donate stuff into the church so it will be there to help out, you know, if there's a disaster. Because we're not going to call the government. We are the government, of the people, for the people, by the people. And so they were thinking, well, we'll send it to our minister. But he actually lives a little ways away from a lot of them. And I said, why are you doing that? Well, we want to give it to the church. Put it in a box. Paint on the box, church. And tell your minister everything that's in that box, and you put it in your garage where the minister can find it if you're not home. And if you have to put a lock on it because you worry about neighbors, put the key where your minister can find it, or send him a copy of the key. Better off putting it where he can find it. And if there's an emergency, he knows, hey, I know there are 500 bandages and mercuricome or iodine or whatever it is, you know, over at so-and-so's house. And he also has a well in his backyard, so if the water's out, he's got a pump so we can get fresh water there. And you start sharing this information within your trusted congregation. Because you're not coming as survivalists with a you are, but survive all with the character of Christ. And what will you gather around you? Your congregation will be your treasure. Because they're gathering because they care about your life. They're not gathering because they care about their life more than your life. That's what survivalists do. You want to prepare? Prepare to have the character of Christ. That will be a preparation that nobody can take away from you. Now, when bad things happen, okay, now everybody's going to be on the fast track to learning this. And those who don't learn it, they will be devoured and eaten and, you know, consumed and taken away, and that will be the end of them. And it's really hard to learn fast. So I suggest, I encourage you to start learning it now. And so what we've encouraged is a lot of the congregations, find the local food bank in your area. Go to them, interview them, see what kind of people there. If you find some that you think are really kind of doing a good job strengthening the poor, not just people handing out food, but actually strengthening the poor, you know, support them. Go out and help with a food drive. It's good practice. And you'll get to know the charitable people in your community. Make a list of every charity in your community. And go there and find out about them. And look for kingdom tracks. Yeah, they're running a charity. And they homeschool their kids. And they're big into maybe essential oils or home health or something like that. Kingdom tracks. Get together with them. They don't have to join your congregation. Let them build trust. Teach them, show them the way by doing what Christ came to do. Start becoming an actual social welfare system based on faith, hope, and charity and that perfect law of liberty. Gather with as many different people as you can. Don't separate and divide yourselves with endless debates about theology. Let God reveal himself to them. You're not the giver of truth. But you can be the witness of the truth by living that life of sacrifice and caring. And it will draw to you other people like that. And that will be a treasure you cannot buy down at the Army Navy store. That will be a survival tool that you cannot order through Amazon. Think about it. If you had a network that reached all across the United States and Canada and Australia of people who care about one another. I was talking about some of the people like Aaron Schwartz, 14 years old, was reprogramming whole computer systems, and the people that he was helping were only seeing him online, and they thought he was this genius and really this smart guy. And they said, why don't you ever come to the physical meetings where we actually get together? And he says, well, my mom won't let me. And they said, well, how old are you? 13. And because of the work that 13-year-old did, more information was out there. And a 14-year-old discovered a early detection test for pancreatic cancer. 14-year-old. Color TV. With the old tube color TV, when the original color TV didn't work at all, but a guy named Steve Allen, 14 years old, in his garage, invented the tube that was necessary to make color TV actually work. 14 years old. That's not going to happen in public school. It's going to happen with people who are thinking outside the box. You mentally disturb people. Disturbed by the truth that makes you crazy in the minds of the zombies of the universe who have been given power because we have been slothful in the ways of God. And we have to turn around and repent and go the other way. And so that's what we're doing on the Living Network. Join us at preparingyou.com or hisholychurch.org. Click on the network links. Join the network in your area. Form congregations of record, core groups, free assemblies. Start getting to know who you can trust and who you can't trust, and start becoming a trusted member of that living network. And we hope to bless you. That's why we're asking you to come, so we have more people to bless. And until then, may peace be upon your house. And may God be with you. God bless.